This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. Every year at this time, we have to stop and remember what happened in December of 2012. It's not that the murder of 20 schoolchildren, six educators, and the killer's mother in Sandy Hook, Connecticut, ever really leaves our minds. It's just that as we approach the anniversary, the memories get more raw. As true as this is for any of us, we can't begin to imagine what it means for those who lost a child there. Last year, Jimmy Green and his wife Nelba joined us in studio to talk about a new record he'd released called Beautiful Life, dedicated to their daughter Anna, who is killed that day. Jimmy is a giant in Connecticut's jazz history, and his wife has become an outspoken advocate. Our conversation was about the music he'd written to celebrate Anna's life and about how they've both coped with this tragedy. This week, Beautiful Life was nominated for 2 Grammy Awards. Jimmy and Nelba, welcome to Where We Live. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks for having us, John.
Before we start hearing some music from the record, which is a beautiful record, and it's an amazing tribute, I just want to ask you first, Jimmy, to talk a bit about the idea that you had for this record. How did you decide to musically honor the life of your daughter Anna? Because this could not have been an easy thing to do, but it came out so beautifully. Just talk about the process a little bit for yourself as an artist.
Well, the process was a pretty long one. For the first few weeks after Anna was killed, we had so much activity in our home. We had neighbors and friends and family from far and wide in our home to support us, which we couldn't have made it without that. Our lives were really full, just trying to stand up and regain strength to do normal everyday things. So playing music at that time wasn't even a thought. But as the weeks went on, I really felt like I needed to get back to some sort of routine. And my musical routine, which is practicing and writing music, had really kind of been out of focus for quite a while. So when I got back to that, the gradual process of practicing again and writing some music, of course, any artist's job is to reflect life as they know it. And the life as I knew it, this new life that we were thrust upon us, the life of our daughter ending in such a violent, tragic way, thrust us into this different reality. And to make sense of it, it helps to have family and friends, my wife, my son. We have to kind of figure out this new reality for ourselves, this horrible new reality. And it helps to be a musician, to use the musical language to fill in the gaps and to express the things that words can't. So as that process went on, obviously the music from this recording was born. And through the help of many, many people, all the musicians on the recording, some of the greatest jazz artists in the world, the people that produced the recording, the Chesky brothers, the whole musical community came together to really support what I wanted to do, which is to use whatever little bit of the talent that I have to pay tribute to my little girl.
Now, Bob, I'm wondering if you can talk to us about this period for you and how music helped, how Jimmy being part of this amazing collaborative music scene and being able to express this through music actually was helpful to you, if indeed it was, through these last few years.
Well, one of the interesting parts of this is when there is a child loss, I think the marriage can be very vulnerable, right? So I'm glad Jimmy had this outlet. I'm glad he would belong to this wonderful community of music and jazz musicians specifically who just poured their love out on us from the moment that this happened. And I'm glad he had this outlet. I did more of the, you know, going to Washington, being involved, going out there. And Jimmy was sitting in Anna's room often with the door closed trying to put her beauty into song. And that was just so beautiful to watch and be witness to. And at first, it was frustrating. You know, why aren't you going to Washington with me to fight? But this is what I now know is another way to keep her memory alive and to give to our son who survived the shooting something beautiful to hear and look at and be a part of. Music was a shared language that we had before she passed. And it makes sense that we still share that now. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. Something I want to ask you about, and before we hear some music, that I have found remarkable about the way the both of you have talked publicly and have actually expressed yourself in music in this way, is that you seem to be focused on celebrating the life of someone who lived only to be 6 years old. And I think so many of us, when we hear about children dying, the first thought we have is the thing that we feel so terrible about is that they don't get to grow up and go to college and be married. And we obsess almost on the things that are taken. But you, and I think Jimmy, through this music, have really focused a lot on celebrating the life of someone who was only with us for 6 years. Could you just talk about that? Because I think that that's a really remarkable way to think about this.
It is critically important to, I mean, if we leave this event in Sandy Hook and aren't any more prepared to protect children, that would be very sad. And it is critically important to remember what happened. But for us as parents, and many of the parents that I've spoken to really want their children remembered for how they lived. And I think Anna lived a life where every day she felt loved. She was connected. She was surrounded in this wonderful community of people who just loved and adored her. She was celebrated for her gifts and talents. She was supported. More of our children should live that way, and that's really important. Mm.
Did you pick up on that a little bit, Jimmy? Tell us a bit more about that, because I just think that the way that you've expressed this idea of celebrating such a short but full life it's inspirational, I think, to a lot of people.
Anna was a beautiful little girl, so giving and loving and talented and expressive. And the thoughts that we're left with are of those things. We remember our little girl as this vibrant, beautiful little girl. And yes, we're heartbroken, and every day is a struggle, John, to come to grips with what we've lost and the way that she died, and why did my little girl have to suffer that way. But we're left with these wonderful memories and the wonderful knowledge of the little life that she did live here on Earth. And that keeps us going. It's a powerful reminder of how we need to treat each other. Anna was loving and showed her love to us as her family, but also to people she had just met, to friends at school. And I really feel like that example, lived through the eyes of a child, can really teach us as adults a better way to get along with those around us.
Mm. And her life is celebrated in this new record called Beautiful Life. It's by saxophonist and composer Jimmy Green, who, of course, has deep, deep roots here in the Connecticut music scene. He's been on our program before, and we're glad to have him back to talk about this record. Nelba Marquez Green, Jimmy's wife, joins him in studio today, and this is Where We Live. Let's listen to some music, and we're going to start, actually, if we can begin with the first track in the record, and let's listen in the background, because I want to ask you a question about it. Go ahead, Kayan. Jimmy, what are we hearing there?
We are in Puerto Rico at my in-law's house, Nelba's parents, at holiday time. This was in December of 2011, Anna's last time to Puerto Rico. And every Christmas, every holiday time, it spans from before Christmas and it ends well after New Year's, there are these celebrations where a bunch of musicians will gather and sing and play carols like the ones we just heard, and have a great time of food and fun and family and friends. And it's called a parranda. Well, that was one of them in my in-law's living room in their home in Puerto Rico. And Nelba and I were there along with our two kids and my in-laws and a lot of Nelba's aunts and uncles and cousins. And we're all singing and playing and having a great time. So that's how the CD opens.
And it's a beautiful, Nelba, first sound to hear in this record, and it's unexpected in many ways.
It is. It is. Puerto Rican Christmas carols, equal parts drinking songs, equal parts birth of Jesus. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. And then you move into this opening theme, and it's you playing, Jimmy, with the great guitarist Pat Metheny.
Pat is an amazing musician, as we all know. He's one of the greatest jazz musicians we have today, and he's a great human being. He reached out to me just a few days after Anna was killed and just offered his support and his condolences and said, whenever you need me, you know, I'm available.
And what's the theme that we're hearing?
This is Come Thou Almighty King. This is a hymn that I wasn't aware of, but it appeared in my son's first year piano lesson book. He had, at that time, he had just started piano lessons in Winnipeg. It was our last year in Winnipeg. And this was June, pretty much at the end of his year of taking lessons. And this hymn appeared, and my daughter, who always loved to, number one, participate with whatever her older brother was doing, and number two, just loved music, loved to sing, she would, they printed the lyrics of the hymn in the book, And so Anna would sing along with Isaiah as he was practicing it. And Nelba had the wonderful idea of let's capture this. Let's videotape this. Mm. So we did. Nelba did videotape it. And in the days after Anna was killed, we sent that video out as sort of a statement from our family. And that became a very special moment for us. And in planning this recording, I really wanted to play this song. So I arranged the hymn for Pat and I to play. And at the very end of the track, you'll hear that audio from Nelba's home recording of Anna singing, Come Thou Almighty King.
Well, let's listen to just a little bit of Jimmy Green playing with Pat Metheny here. Now, if we could, let's just listen to, as you were saying before, the end of the song. This is from a video that I think many of us saw on Facebook and in the days following the terrible event. And this is Anna Grace singing. It's beautiful. Jimmy Green's new record is called Beautiful Life, and it celebrates the life of his daughter, Anna, who was killed at Sandy Hook. And we're talking with Jimmy Green and his wife, Nelba Marquez Green, here on Where We Live Today. That's the first track on the record, and the next track is called Last Summer. And listen, if we can just listen to a little bit in the background, I want to ask you about this track, Jimmy, and some of the music that is here with this amazing quartet that you're playing with.
Yeah. The musicians on this recording, I wanted them to participate not only because they're world-class jazz artists and some of the best examples of musicians we have today, but also because there's a connection between each of them and me and my family. And I really wanted that meaningful connection to be present on the recording as well. This is such a special personal recording, and I really felt like the musicians on it not only should be amazing for just for their musicianship, but also a personal connection with my family. So the rhythm section, one of the rhythm sections on this recording, the drummer for the entire recording, Lewis Nash, the bassist for the entire recording, Christian McBride, and Kenny Barron, who plays piano on two duet tracks with me, they were the rhythm section of the Thelonious Monk Institute Jazz Competition when I was 21 years old in 1996. I was a finalist in the Monk Institute saxophone competition, international saxophone competition, and I was scared and nervous and shaking, and I walked up on stage for the semifinal round and had never met any of the musicians before, and I'd idolized all of them. I had dozens of records with them on it, so my first time meeting them was walking on stage, and I had to actually lead them through the three songs that I was competing on. And you can imagine, for a 21-year-old kid, and five of my saxophone heroes mm-hmm. were in the audience judging the competition, and I had these three amazing musicians behind me playing, it was an extremely daunting moment, but they made me feel so comfortable and so welcomed and like, you belong here. And that just gave me so much confidence as I played with them. I've played in their bands in the years since. I've played in Lewis Nash's band pretty much since that day. And I played a lot with Kenny Barron, and I played with Christian McBride as well. And I just really felt like I wanted them on the recording.
It's so interesting you talk about the support of musicians, and that means a couple things. The support of people coming together in a terrible time and helping you, but also just the support of playing music with people who actually are meaningful to you. That's a fairly sort of special family that those of us who aren't musicians maybe don't quite understand.
Absolutely. And one of the other pianists on the recording, Reenie Rosedus, I've played with her a lot over the last, 12, 14 years, and her husband, Bill Charlap, and they become really close friends. And other people like Javier Colon and LaTanya Farrell and Anika Noni Rose, I've known since I was in high school and college. And the kids from the Linden Christian School Choir were classmates of my kids when they attended that school. And the musicians of the Hartford Symphony Orchestra, I wrote 10 arrangements for strings and jazz quartet that we performed before Anna was killed. This was in 2012. So all the musicians on the recording have a connection to my family.
As we head into our first break, I actually want to have you talk a little bit about the piece When I Come Home. And this features Javier Colon, the great vocalist. And one thing I actually noticed on your Facebook page, Nelb, is not too terribly long ago, you folks got to meet Stevie Wonder, and who I know is a musical hero, certainly a musical hero of mine. And this track that we're about to hear actually so much reminds me of Stevie's music from the 1970s. I'm just wondering if you can talk a little bit about that, if you would, Nelba, because people like that reaching out and being supportive through this, it's just part of this experience that you've gone through, and just seeing how many people, including heroes, are stepping forward and being very, very kind.
You know, one of the beautiful parts about Anna when she was alive is that she had a very special way of drawing people in from different backgrounds, and we found the same thing in her death. People feel connected to Anna, whether they're white people, black people, musicians, and none, but certainly musicians feel like they have lost a member of their village. So it wasn't, I mean, we were honored when Stevie reached out and Harry was there. Harry Connick Jr. was at our house the night of the shooting. Mm. We didn't even know he knew where we lived, and he drove to, just heartbroken. Anna was a member of their village, and I think for many of them, supporting us through song is a way that they can continue to remember her, honor her, support Isaiah and her dad and me, and we're just incredibly grateful for that. And yeah, Javier does a wonderful job on When I Come Home.
Yeah. And do you want to maybe say something about this track before we hear it, Jimmy?
This song was actually written several years ago. I did a recording called Live at Smalls, and the song was originally entitled Home. I wrote it in the first few months where we lived in Winnipeg. We moved there in August of 2009 for me to teach at the University of Manitoba on a tenure track full-time basis. And as you can imagine, never living anywhere except for between Hartford and New York City, moving halfway across the continent induced a lot of homesickness. Mm-hmm. So I wrote this song. I came back to record Live at Smalls in February of 2010 and wrote this song to play and to record on that album. Well, after Anna was killed, I was really thinking that any music that I would come up with, to pay tribute to Anna, had to have lyrics, had to have singers, because she sang and she loved listening to singers and songs with words. So I listened to this song and thought, wow, I could really write lyrics to this song. So I chose to write lyrics to this song, and it's called Now When I Come Home.
You're listening to a program we recorded last year with saxophonist Jimmy Green and his wife, Nelba Marquez Green. Jimmy's album, Beautiful Life, was just nominated for 2 Grammy Awards, and we're heading out of the segment with When I Come Home, featuring Javier Colon, which was nominated for Best Arrangement. This is Where We Live.
Day after day, I see children play, laugh, turn, and wave goodbye. Your beauty in their eyes can't help but
this is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. We're talking about jazz today because we have Jimmy Green and Nelba Marquez Green here. Jimmy Green is the great saxophonist and composer whose new record, Beautiful Life, celebrates the life of his daughter, Anna Grace, who was killed at Sandy Hook. And we're listening to some of this music today, and we're talking with them about Anna's life. Let's actually listen to the next song from the record here. It features the vocalist Kurt Elling, and the track is called Anna's Way. Maybe you can talk about it for a moment, Jimmy, because this is a theme, again, that it's an older theme for you.
Yeah, this song was written in, 2008 maybe, and it was entitled Anna Grace. Anna was 2 years old at the time, and it was written for an album that I did called Mission Statement. When Anna was killed, I felt like I wanted to write lyrics. I wanted to have songs and singers sing these songs. And this song I felt was really ripe for, having lyrics added to it. and it's retitled Anna's Way, and it really speaks to a lot of her character. And it was really meaningful to have her classmates, her friends in her kindergarten class when she was a student at Linden Christian School in Winnipeg. They're singing on it, as well as the fourth graders who were my son Isaiah's classmates from Linden. They sing background for Kurt Elling.
And we're actually going to hear a little bit of that so that we can hear the kids singing with Kurt. Let's listen for a moment.
Giving hearts a hug each day, she loved to pray and thank God for His blessings. Thoughtful note, oh mama, there, her love never lacked expressing. We'll miss her smile.
I love the sound of the children singing with him.
They did an amazing job. And their director, Brenda Johnson, I don't know how she got those kids to sing a lot of those intervals. That's not children's choir material right there.
That's exactly not children's choir material necessarily. Can you tell us, Nelba, about what the Anna Grace Project is?
Sure. After her death, we really wanted to focus in on something that would honor her, but also that would really make a difference in the lives of children. I was working at the time of her death and still am now at Klingberg Family Centers as director of the outpatient psychotherapy clinic. And we know that the promotion of love, community, and connection for children really is a protective factor for kids, especially those who are vulnerable. I talk a lot about Anna and her wonderful life and how connected and loved she was. And we really feel like one of the things that would prevent deaths or incidents like the one that took her life is if all kids. I often think about Adam Lanza and what if he had a life where he was connected in a meaningful and healthy way to others and loved and felt loved and respected and honored. Perhaps that would have made a difference.
In the days following that event, I began to see through communication that came out through Facebook and Twitter, and this term kept popping up, and it was love wins.
That's right.
And it's something that then became associated with you and with the memory of Anna. Can you explain what that means to you?
You know, we wanted so desperately to remember Anna as she lived and to remember our family as who we were, not just for this one thing that happened to us December 14th, as important as that is, and we don't want people to forget. We also wanted people to focus in on what we thought was good about Anna's life and was healthy and strong, and that was love. I mean, she just lived such an amazing life. We felt her love all over us. We feel like it's really important to live with this philosophy for our son who survived. We often don't get a chance to talk about him a lot, but he's an amazing kid. Mm-hmm. And we want two things for him, that he's able to feel loved still despite this tragedy, and that he's able to express love out to others. You know, this love of God that we feel so strongly about in our lives that we know is sustaining us now, we feel like it is our job to put that out there. It is our choice to put that out there. And I don't know, Jimmy, if you have other things to add to that.
Speaking about our faith, we hold to the hope that we'll be reunited with Anna one day. Mm-hmm. Her story, although it was very brief on this earth, is not the end of Anna's story, in that she's living a brand new life right now in heaven, and that one day we'll join her. Mm-hmm. So love wins.
What I love about this idea is that an awful lot of what we talk about, certainly in the media, and I talk about terrible things that are happening in the world all the time, is that when we often say love wins, it's because something else loses. Like there's an enemy on the other side. But even, Nelvin, hearing you talk about how you feel about thinking about Adam Lanza or other children going through things so that nothing like this happens, there's a sense that it's not like there's an enemy that's evil on the other side. It's just that you're talking about love actually being something that overcomes all of these things. It's not as though it's fighting something on the other side.
One of the most unfortunate things about this tragedy is that people will often talk to us and say, oh, you know, that monster who took your daughter's life, or that woman who was the mother of the monster. And, when you talk like that, it doesn't fix anything. And it's not going to help prevent anything the next time. This was a young person who obviously had some issues and some needs that weren't met. We have to find a way to reach these vulnerable people. And the only way to do that is through love and compassion. I mean, really, it is. I'm not saying I don't have days where I'm not angry. I don't have days. You know, the days are either bad or worse. But if we're not looking at this as an opportunity to say, what went wrong and how do we fix it in a really meaningful way that doesn't turn it into an us versus them, then we're not doing the right thing. And that's really what the Honor Grace Project does. It's how do we find these vulnerable families and not stigmatize them or further push them away from resources that would help them, but say, hey, let's embrace you, let's bring you in, and let's find you what you need. You don't need to do an act of violence to get the attention you need.
And when you spoke recently on the two-year anniversary of the shooting, you mentioned the mothers in Ferguson, Missouri, and other places, and that maybe we can broaden a conversation about violence in America to beyond this sort of violence, because this sort of violence is so, thankfully, so incredibly, incredibly, incredibly rare. The real violence that happens is violence that happens in Hartford and Bridgeport, New Haven, and Ferguson, and frankly, every other place in America. And that is, I think, part of the message that you're trying to send.
Absolutely. I had the honor and the privilege of meeting Sabrina Fulton, Trayvon Martin's mother, last summer, and she brought about 50 of us who have lost children to gun violence into a conversation, and just really one of the most beautiful women you could ever meet. And we just learned so much from each other, from how our children's deaths were handled. And this is really about broadening the conversation. I am thankful that people remember Anna. I also want people to remember Trayvon and all of the others who have been lost in this way.
Jimmy, I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about this, because as we talked earlier in the program about how you were able to use your music as an outlet, and Nelba's been more forward-facing in the public talking about some of these issues of violence. Can you talk about how some of this is working its way into either your work or how you feel as a musician you want to place yourself in this national conversation about all these things that we're just talking about here?
Well, I think I've placed myself, and we've placed ourselves as a family in the forefront of the discussion. We've appeared on many shows, and I've been to Washington too, lobbying for common sense measures to combat gun violence, background checks, universal background checks, encouraging people to, if they do have weapons in their home, keep them locked up. Things like this that are reduced magazine capacity, things that most Americans want. But somehow have not become part of our national discussion on gun safety. I feel very strongly about these things. In addition, just to piggyback on something that Nelba said, when you frame Adam Lanza or people like that as monsters, that really it has a way of kind of absolving you of thinking about it because, well, those people do that sort of thing. Well, the potential is there for this to happen a lot more often if we don't do things to be inclusive, to be loving, to be a community that embraces everyone in it and tries to find avenues and support for everyone in it. So I really feel like it's up to all of us individually. It's not just up to someone who has a monster in their house, but it's up to all of us to really look in the mirror and say, what kind of country do I want to live in?
And I think you mentioned this earlier, but the contrast between the life that Anna lived for these short 6 years, and as we saw recently with this most recent report that came out from the State Child Advocate about the life of isolation that Adam Lanza lived, and this is not to excuse and this is not to take blame away from where it lies, but there's a very simple fact that he lived a very difficult 20 years on this earth. And Anna lived a very good 6 years on this earth, and her life ended in a terrible way. But that is something that I think you keep in the forefront of people's minds when you talk like this. Now, but I think it's important.
It's all about relationships. Relationships are important. Relationships are healing. You get to decide what you do with the difficult lot you are given. I mean, we would not be where we are now without our positive and healthy relationships. I just wish Adam Lanza had some of those. Mm.
We're talking with Nelba Marquez Green and Jimmy Green. We're actually going to just hear a little bit of one more song. And the song is Where is the Love? And it features the great pianist Kenny Barron. And as maybe we hear a little bit going out, maybe you can tell us about recording with this hero. He's truly one of the great pianists of our time.
Kenny is an amazing musician, obviously, but a very generous and warm spirit. And like I mentioned earlier, he was at the piano when I was a 21-year-old nervous competitor at the Thelonious Monk Jazz Saxophone Competition. And he hired me and his band to play some concerts with him in Boston and Chicago, and I play with him in Missouri and other places as well. And he's just an amazing musician, and I love sharing music with him. And Where is Love is a composition, it's a song from the musical Oliver that Jackie McLean taught to me at my first meeting with him at the Artist Collective when I was 15 years old. He just showed me the melody. So for this recording, I had a lot of time, obviously, after Anna was killed, to reflect on her life and on my life as well. And this song kept coming up as one that was very meaningful because of that introduction to Jackie McLean and his, as he gave so much to me and so many others. But to me, he poured so much of himself into my life. I really felt like I wanted to record this song.
So as we head to break, let's listen to a little bit of this music. And this is Kenny Barron playing with Jimmy Green. And the record is called Beautiful Life, and it celebrates the life of Anna Grace, who was killed at Sandy Hook. And Jimmy Green, of course, the saxophonist and great composer who joins us in studio today, along with his wife, Nelba Marquez Green. We're talking about her life, and we're listening to some music here on Where We Live. This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. Coming up on tomorrow's show, when was the last time you sent a letter? No, not an email, but a real tangible piece of snail mail. Probably not too recently, right? On our next episode, we'll take a look at the fading art of letter writing. We'll learn about how some 17th century letters were tracked down by a Yale historian. We'll also hear how the Love Lettering Project is encouraging people to pen some love letters to their cities. Hope you can join the conversation on the next Where We Live. Today we're listening back to a conversation we had last year with Jimmy Green and Nelba Marquez Green about Jimmy's record Beautiful Life, which was recently nominated for Grammy Awards for Best Jazz Instrumental Album and Best Arrangement for the song When I Come Home. This album celebrates the life of their daughter, Anna Grace, who was killed at Sandy Hook. We're talking about her life, and we're talking about listening to this music, and I'd like to talk about the track Maybe. Jimmy, this features you with the great pianist Kenny Barron. Tell me about why you put this on the record.
Well, Anna loved the musical Annie and knew all the songs from the soundtrack and had watched the movie and loved to sing this particular song. So she would sing this song as we were driving around the car. She'd sing this in the back seat, a cappella, and the sound of her voice, which is beautiful, always stuck with me and sticks with me to this day. So when we recorded this, I wanted to record just the melody because that's what she would sing, and I wanted to record it on an instrument that would reflect her vocal range, so I chose soprano saxophone to play it.
It's interesting you talk about the vocal range using the soprano saxophone, and you do that sometimes on this record. Last time you were here, you were playing with the great Mario Pavone, the bassist, and we were talking a little bit about singing through the saxophone, about the sound that saxophone is making. For people who don't know you, you're a big guy, and you're a tenor saxophonist, and I think about that big, brawny sound, and I think about people like you and John Coltrane and Sonny Rollins, who are big guys with big sounds. But when you use the soprano, there is a much different voice, and in many ways you are echoing her voice.
Absolutely. I love the soprano. I've always loved it. And as soon as I could afford one, when I was almost out of college, I bought one and have been playing it ever since. I really feel like it's a part of my voice now. And yeah, I am a big guy and love the tenor sound and have always prioritized playing tenor. But soprano is a very, very important part of what I do.
Let's listen to one of the last tracks on the record. And this is a setting of the Lord's Prayer. People will know the words. And it features Cyrus Chestnut and LaTanya Farrell. Let's listen. That's a beautiful arrangement, Jimmy.
Thank you, John. That was actually another song that I had written many years ago to accompany that portion of scripture and never recorded the words, recorded as an instrumental, and really felt like this was the appropriate time to record with the scripture as well. That's a prayer that I would pray often with Anna and Isaiah at bedtime. And a prayer that was taught to me by my mom when I was a youngster. So I thought, what better way to pay tribute to my little girl than to include this prayer and a statement of our faith and a statement of our family.
We just have a few minutes left in the program, and I'm so glad to be able to listen to this music with you. Now, Bites, I have to ask you, how are you doing? You said earlier in the program that, you know, days are either bad or they're worse, but obviously, there's a lot of joy and other things that are happening in your life. How are you doing 2 years after? I mean, how do you feel yourself personally coping with this new world?
We don't get an option in what happens to us. We get an option in how we respond. Mm. And we have chosen to respond with love wins. It is a brutal reality that you wake up to every day. And you often forget. The other day we were somewhere and the fee was $10 a person. And I turned to Jimmy and I said, we need 40 bucks. Because I forgot. And that's just kind of how the brain protects you. But despite all we've been given, we choose to respond. Love wins. I mean, I can't make it. I can't sanitize it. It is pretty awful. Yet we still get a choice in how we respond. Mm.
Thank you so much for coming in. I really appreciate you.
Thank you for having
you joining us.
Yeah.
For this. Jimmy, I'm just wondering if you can tell us a little bit about the last track on the record. It features a poem, and it's, as Nell was just saying, it's very direct in its way. Yeah. About what it's saying.
Yeah. I really felt like there's been a lot of really amazing, well-meaning people who understandably don't know what to say or what to do and have looked to us, what can I do to help? What can I do? And in a small way, this is my response. This is what we all can do. This is a song that one of the three or four songs that was specifically written from beginning to end for this recording. And the music and the spoken word were written specifically for this. And to deliver the spoken word, I really felt like it was important to have, like I said, a musician who was meaningful to my family and me. Well, Anika and I went to high school together, Bloomfield High School. And, of course, she's gone on to a lot of fame. She's a Tony Award-winning actress, and she's an amazing singer. She always has been. And she was the voice of Princess Tiana, who is the lead role in Disney's The Princess and the Frog on the loved Disney princess movies. And we saw that together in the theater. And she really loved the character. And I really felt like it was important to have Anika participate for that reason. This is Little Voices.
Jimmy Green, thank you so much for sharing this with us. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on, John.
This is Where We Live.
Little voices calling. Little voices laughing. Little voices singing. All those precious little voices. Brightening our day, stealing our hearts, shaping our lives. In the blink of an eye, they're gone. Now there's just silence, where those little voices used to be. Now it's up to you. It's up to me. Will you make the choice to be a voice? Will you walk humbly, show mercy, and love your neighbor?